Okay, we're going to get started because I know everyone's on a tight time frame. Welcome to session 3209. I want to make sure you're all in the right place. Health reform and behavioral health, primary care and substance use, and mental health services integration, models and recommendations for making this a reality. We will have, my name is Kathy Gorosh, and I'm a section counselor with the ATOD section. We did this presentation in conjunction with the mental health section, and they have sessions concurrently, so people are coming and going, as you probably have been doing. I want to point out that we have ATOD program books in the back that talks about all our sessions, and after Wednesday, they're no good, so please take one. There's also a flyer on our other health reform-related session, which is this afternoon at 4:30 to 6 o'clock. It is listed in room 102B, which is a few doors down. There may be a room change because it doesn't say that right now, but we will note that for you. But that's a roundtable session. I want to emphasize that because depending on what you're looking at for your sessions, the book is wrong. The book says it's an oral session. It's a roundtable, and it's really, in a sense, to continue this kind of dialogue on integration services, looking at models and lessons learned. So the ATOD has our awards and social on Tuesday night in 104B, so we ask for you to join us, or please stop by, and to think about ATOD or mental health as one of your sections, if you're not in it already. So, with that, we will have four speakers, and I will introduce them one at a time, so that, and we will take questions at the end. So the ACA, just about here, barring all that got us here, it will start, and people will have services in January, with the triple aim of improving individual health and looking at the population and outcomes. It's time that we really look more closely at existing models that have been able to put the pieces together and position themselves, and we have some wonderful examples for you to hear about today that have been doing this for some time. So as I said, we have four presenters. I will introduce them as we go, but what you'll hear is an overview of all the models. We're going to have examples of integration bidirectionally. So first we'll hear about integration of behavioral health into a primary care setting, and then, primary care into a behavioral health setting, and then our next, after that, the other way, and then we'll have a recap, overview, and discussion at the end. So with that, I'd like to introduce Bill Reedy. He is a principal at Brookville Consulting, an experienced behavioral health care executive, consultant, clinical improvement leader, and licensed clinical social worker, with a focus improving the health of people dealing with mental health and substance use problems. His expertise is in primary care-based behavioral health integration and co-occurring disorders, and he seems like he is the ideal person to start us off with the overview. So with that, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Delighted to be here this afternoon to talk with you all about this important topic. And thank you for your kind introduction. If I can figure out how to move the slides here. What I hope to cover in a few minutes is just to start to give you a bit of the lay of the land, kind of a bit of an overview about what the prevailing forces and dynamics are right now that make this an opportune time to start to accelerate our efforts to integrate behavioral health and primary care services. So we're going to cover in a few minutes just kind of look at kind of why this is happening, some of the approaches that are being used, some of the main models, and then just to kind of identify key elements, the core elements that what's involved in integration when we talk about that. The why is pretty straightforward. Coming to Boston, some of you have probably been driving around here, and the story goes that the roads were designed by people who just followed the cow paths that were kind of left historically here, and there's a lot of those roads that you can't get there from here on. You get on, you see where you want to go, and you can't quite get to where you want to go. And healthcare, in much the same way, was designed following patterns that most often were designed for the benefits and the convenience of providers and health systems and hospitals. And so what we've ended up with that design, which wasn't patient-centered and person-focused as we're talking about now, is the kind of fragmentation that's led to kind of high costs, satisfaction that could be much better, in many instances poor outcomes, and as you probably know and you will see, actually decreased early death and suffering from illness. And a feature of that, as I think all of you are well aware of, is that behind health problems and our experience of illness, the psychosocial issues are really driving factors in chronic disease, how we experience health and illness. And our health and our is very dependent not only on our physical health, but our emotional state, the social supports we have available to us. Kind of all of those social determinants of health have a major impact in kind of what happens, what the outcomes are. Under the category of why, there's a few other kind of statistics you're probably well aware of. And just to cite Medicaid as a reference point, as you many of you may well know this, but 5% of the Medicaid beneficiaries account for something like 50% of the cost. And 50% of the beneficiaries who have chronic illnesses, disabilities, have behavioral health, meaning mental health and substance use disorder comorbidities. And so when you look at what impact that has, the addition of a mental health or substance use issue on top of another chronic condition, diabetes, asthma, COPD, heart disease, is associated with increasing the cost 3 to 4 times. Because of the complexity of the complicating factors of mental illness and substance disorders, it really inhibits the person's ability to participate in care and the care for themselves and creates a whole other set of risk factors. And then, of course, the final bullet point there is that many of you probably know, it's a startling fact, is that people who have serious mental illness die on average 25 years earlier than the general population. And they die predominantly of physical health causes, from the diseases that kind of kill everybody eventually, but kill them at a much higher rate. And even things like suicide is a small chunk of that, but even suicide is greatly impacted by substance use disorder. So people who are using substances are the ones who are more likely to kind of act on the suicidality. So there's a lot of factors that point to the need to do better. Still with the whys, even though the experience of mental health and mental health concerns is very common, you know, 25% of the population at any one time is dealing with some kind of a diagnosable mental health condition. But starting almost, you know, 67% of the people with disorders never get any behavioral health treatment. And of people who get treatment, about half of all of that treatment comes in primary care. So the reality that we've dealt with for many years is that primary care is the de facto behavioral health, mental health care system in this country. And for better or worse, sometimes that's worked well, sometimes not so well, but it's been kind of the default place that people go. There's no stigma in going to your family physician, your primary practice clinic. That's where you go with problems. And another fact, and this may well be related to stigma, the stigma associated with behavioral health problems, but also to the design of the system and the fragmentation. But when a primary care physician or provider makes a referral to a behavioral health specialist, in almost half the time patients don't follow through, they don't show up. So what's been happening, and you're all well aware of it, in the last number of years is some active things that have involved revisioning healthcare. Ed Wagner and his work, and with all his colleagues at Group Health, have recognized the fact that our healthcare has been organized around acute care, when the problems that we really needed to learn how to address were chronic disease, and that's where the cost was, that's where the death and disability and disease burden was piling up. So the chronic care model, it's now sometimes called the planned care model, really has become very prominent in how we think about healthcare. And realizing you have to look at all of those different components. Well, I guess I apologize, I can't see that too well up there. But it means being proactive and being responsible for the population rather than being reactive and waiting for people to have some kind of acute problem that they come in for help for. Another important part of the revisioning has come from Don Berwick and Tom Nolan and the group at IHI, who really have revisioned healthcare to organize it around the triple aim that I'm sure you're all very familiar with. But it's a powerful paradigm to kind of think about. We organize healthcare around the core values of being responsible for a population of people, meaning it's rather the way lots of healthcare functions today is I'm responsible for the care I'm giving that individual in front of me, but I'm not thinking about the people who aren't in front of me. And so I don't go out of my way to kind of be proactive and say, geez, you know, John Smith should be here to get his diabetes followed. So there's that counterbalancing concern that we have to be responsible for both the people we're seeing directly, but also the people who we need to reach out to and kind of bring in. And the experience of care, and other core value that you're also, I'm sure, familiar with, is that the experience of care can be very dysthymic for people. That it's kind of disorganized, it's a tough experience, and it meets many disappointments. And then, of course, cost of care. So the paradigm is changing, again, as we know, in terms of accountability, accountable for population outcomes. And that has huge implications when you think about mental health and substance use disorders, because those of you who've been around for a few years know it was often hard to get on the agenda. But it's increasingly clear to people that you can't ignore these kinds of problems anymore, because they are driving, in a major way, driving health costs. Health cost and poor outcomes. So that when you look to kind of why people are not doing well, oftentimes there's an unaddressed behavioral health or psychosocial problem that's not being addressed. And so that value, I guess the design of the system is part of what we're starting to realize is a determinant of healthcare, and so that we really need to take seriously how we design our systems, how we deliver the services, and that the value is created by a system of care. It's not just that I do my piece and my job is done, and thank goodness that's somebody else will do the other part, but that we're all responsible in a system of care to make the connections, the transitions, to kind of have a continuity of care so that we work from a unified plan and that we guide a patient through the system in a thoughtful way. So part of that paradigm has to do with the design as a design feature, that rather than paving the roads that the cows the cow paths in Boston, rather than doing that, going the old habitual way of doing it, we need to consciously go back and redesign what we do around patient-centered, patient-driven features that organize the care around what the person needs. And the triple aim also kind of organizes us to think about quality in very actionable terms, meaning it's the best medical services, the best health outcomes, and the best cost outcomes. Everybody knows about these two also significant events that have been occurred that have impacted us. But the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, what we do know is that provides a basic benefit that includes behavioral health care and is going to make millions of more people have that coverage available to them. And the the Parity Act provides that that health insurance coverage for behavioral health conditions has to be on par with those benefits provided for other general medical conditions. So that also kind of provides greater access to people who can benefit from treatment of these conditions. So the population focus is something that we need to take seriously in our daily work, in whatever aspects we're looking at in terms of the things that we, whatever end of it that we're coming at it. And so you do the very best you can and attend to the needs of the person in sitting in front of you, the person and the family, but you learn from that and you apply it to the population. And that whatever perspective we're coming at it from, we need to kind of understand the needs of the population we serve, and we need to be proactive in identifying those needs and reaching out to them to engage them in the health resources that they need. So that means kind of stratifying risk, identifying high-risk groups, making real efforts to kind of reach out to them. And it implies having active integrator roles, having an integrator for the care, taking responsibility for that, not having that diverse somebody else's job. It's always, it's not my job, it's somebody else's, but it's all of our jobs. Key features to think about, you're going to hear a lot of detailed examples from our next distinguished panel presenters, but features that are common in integrated models have to do with kind of aligning financial incentives, information exchange, really having kind of the whole story open and in front of people so people can work from a common plan, kind of understand what's going on. If any of you have had your own recent health experiences or with family members, it's incredible how many times they ask you the same questions. You have to tell the same story over and over and over again, and it's like nobody ever talks to anybody else in healthcare. So it's which is very frustrating for patients and families. Multidisciplinary teams, you know, are really becoming essential. And to be accountable for these needs of the population, we really have to have all the range of services that we need. And we need to have ways to assess what we're doing, that it works, and figure out ways to reward quality. The models, there's lots of models, and I decided rather than kind of give you a long list of the different models that are available, they can basically be divided into three broad groups. There is the basic models of integrations are kind of coordinated care, which means that it's generally not co-located, but there are some kind of communication and referral relationships that exist between providers, between health providers and behavioral health and substance use specialists. Could be formal relationships, more often informal, but that's kind of one common way that integration has been taking place. The other category of models is co-located. So there's physical proximity where specialty mental health and substance use professionals are co-located along with behavioral health or with physical health primary care professionals. And they can work in varying degrees of collaboration or integration, but they're at least in one place and in one proximity. And then the third category of models has to do with really integrated care delivery, which takes real practice change. People have to change how they do their practice. You can't just be in the co-located and do traditional psychotherapy. You need to kind of have a whole different way of reaching out and participating. And some of the functions, the focus of an integrated practice change, and you'll hear elements of this, I'm sure, but it really touches those main categories. It's kind of about relationship and communication practices. You really need to think about that, and there's kind of a list of those things underneath about how you access and handoffs and kind of who's on the team and how you share your expertise. And then there's the patient care and population impact you need to be focused on. So that means that you've got to be actively screening, you've got to be reaching out, figuring out, identifying problems before they become crisis as early as possible. Reach out with ESPRT or alcohol and drug screening, depression screening. You have to spread the behavioral health skills through the primary care team. You have to kind of develop integrated care pathways. Some of the programs have depression treatment protocols. I mean, there's some wonderful examples of great, more problem-specific pathways, substance use treatment pathways. And you really need to keep a family focus and kind of think all the time of the caregivers and supports, the social support network of the individuals have. It's so important in terms of the outcomes of care and how people are going to do. So that needs to be woven in. Community integration is another crucial element when you kind of think of the practice change that goes along with integrated care, because we don't live in isolation. The world doesn't end at the office door. The people live in the real world. And so that we need to be increasingly tuned in to, self-help referral connections, especially all the different various specialty resources we might need, and that needs to be woven in. That other element there, care management, is also critical, and that's the coordination, have an integrated care plan, of which it's and a patient-centered care plan where the person is an active participant and partner in kind of creating their wellness, their care plan, that we do self-management support to really give them the tools that they need to help them to learn how to effectively manage their conditions and their diseases. That takes skill. Behavioral health skills are motivational interviewing, for example. I mean, those are skills that's an evidence-based practice that should be spread across the board to all the healthcare providers. Trying to speed up here, but the clinic system integration, those are kind of the basic mechanics of kind of how our practice is designed. So that's scheduling and access and that leadership is really behind the importance of this. So how do we integrate care? It can happen under any delivery system design. So there's not just one right way to do it. States, all the different states are doing various things, some the same, some different. But the important thing is if you kind of keep in mind some of these design features, kind of the design elements, remember who you're designing it for. Keep it patient-centered, family-focused, and draw on the experience of some of the folks you're going to hear from, then you can kind of adapt these approaches to suit your own local circumstances and needs. So on that, I'm going to pass along the microphone to our next presenter. I would highlight there's lots of resources out there, but one that's particularly good, if you don't know about this, SAMHSA HRSA's Center for Integrated Health Solutions is kind of a great spot, just to a one-stop, easy place to go, and has a very deep a breadth of resources that's readily available. So I'd encourage you to go there and look, and you'll find a lot of good information. Thank you.